Receiving feedback, and then we'll be wrapping up. So that's kind of where we're headed. In the coming weeks, we'll be talking about boundaries, we'll be talking about communicating during conflict, all those sort of good and sometimes scary and confronting things where when you have to do them, it can be really tricky if you don't have some tools, if you don't have some skills. And the fact is, we've all learned our relationship skills from our parents and from the playground, which sometimes aren't the best places to learn those skills. Because although our parents would have been doing their best in terms of communication, they learned their communication skills from their parents. Not necessarily from a course or from reading or studying the subject. So that's kind of where we're headed. I would invite you to look at the people around you, because you're going to have a couple opportunities to talk to someone next to you through this morning, and obviously through other mornings as well. And in a moment, I'm going to get you to talk to someone about a question. But firstly, I need to tell you about the book table. So up in the back corner, we have some beautiful books, some resources that are available. They are from Coorong. We'll have people there that you can use Square, so you can tap. I don't think we're doing cash. I think it's Square only. But there is some amazing books up there. I've got a couple here just to tell you about, but all of them there are excellent. So one of the ones that is up there that we really think is fantastic is Dr. Caroline Leaf's Cleaning Up Your Mental Mess. So I have not read any of her books, but Catherine has read several. So she would have been better to do this promotion, but she has told me a lot about Caroline Leaf. And this book is talking about anxiety, stress, and toxic thinking. And she goes through kind of changing your thoughts, changing the way that you think in order to get free of that stuff. So that is really helpful. This book I have read and I love and I highly recommend. It is Unpunishable by Danny Silk. Something that often can get in the way of relationships, that can get in the way of careers, that can get in the way of life in general, is fear of punishment. Where we're so afraid of doing something wrong, of getting in trouble. Someone's like, I need to meet with you. And we're instantly catastrophizing of like, oh no, what have I done wrong? What am I getting in trouble for? So Danny Silk talks about like the biblical view of punishment and just some absolutely amazing stuff. It will change your life. The other book I have is also a Danny Silk book, and we're actually giving this one away this morning. So this is Keep Your Love On. This will change your life if you implement it. It will change the way you do relationships. It will change the way that you do family. Here's the question for you. I want you to think about, as we're talking about relationships through these 3 weeks, what would be one good takeaway for you from this course? And what might be challenging for you? So just have a think about that. We'll just take a moment, have a think about it, and then I'm going to create a space for you to share that with someone next to you. So what would be one good takeaway for you from this course? Like, is boundaries a thing that you really struggle with that you would like to improve in? Or is confrontation a really scary thing that you would like to gain some tools for? So why don't you just turn to someone next to you and chat about your answers for that. Okay. So Brad mentioned that Chris was going to be here this morning and isn't here. So these are Chris's notes, which means I'm passingly familiar with them. So if you see me staring at them a bit in this section, this is why. But we want to just quickly kind of set up where we are going. So in terms of expectations, I would invite you to expect that if you grab a hold of one of these tools, it's going to change your life. It is going to change your family. It is going to change the dynamics surrounding you. It can be really easy to enter this kind of thing with the hope that it will change the people around us, that it will result in the people around us being more healthy. But we would invite you to be looking for how you can change yourself, how you can grow yourself, because we can all be growing in our communication skills. The goal of this course is to help each of us develop stronger connections with family, friends, colleagues, and partners. So here is some statistics from 2018. So I would say that these have probably got more dire over the last year. But in 2018, 1 in 4 Australian adults identified as feeling lonely. 1 in 2 feel lonely at least one day a week. 1 in 4 feel lonely for 3 or more days a week. And nearly 55% of population feel they sometimes lack companionship. 1 in 4 experience high levels of social interaction anxiety, and they found that lonely Australians have worse mental and physical health. As I said, I would put good money on it that those statistics have worsened over 2020 as people were isolated and felt alone. So this is why this is important, because so many people are walking around experiencing this. So here's what it's going to take for us to get something, to get what the Lord has for us out of this. It's going to take humility. It's going to take an openness and willingness to admit that we have room to grow in our relationships. We all have room to grow in our relationships. We all have room to grow in our connections and communications. It's going to take vulnerability. Relationships are vulnerable. There is an inherent riskiness to opening your heart to connection. You might get hurt in the process. There is an inherent riskiness and vulnerability to relationships. Learning always comes with risk and the possibility of failure. And so this might require trying out new skills, which may feel awkward at first, but they only feel less awkward by implementing them, by trying them. When you started to learn to drive, there were so many skills. At least this was my experience, like trying to watch all the mirrors at once, manage the clutch, manage the radio, the person next to me, all those different things. There were so many different aspects. There's so many different skills that combine into driving a car. And at first, each of those skills feels kind of unnatural. And it's only through practice that it actually becomes easy. And it's the same with relationship skills. They will feel awkward at first, but we will get to a place where they feel easier. As we talk about healthy relationships, it is normal and natural for any unhealthiness in our relationships to kind of become noticeable, for us to notice any dysfunction as we're talking about what it looks like to do things healthily. That's normal, that's healthy, that's really actually quite helpful because it gives you a place to work from. But we have noticed that as we teach on relationships, because this is a topic I get to teach on pretty regularly, we've noticed that it can bring up things for people. It can be kind of confronting. And so we want to let you know that we have people available to pray with you if you need some prayer support. We also have some counselors available if you need additional support beyond just prayer. I am one of those, but we also have some out-of-house counselors available. So why do healthy relationships matter? It matters because we were made for connection. Everything the Lord has ever done has been about connection. It's been about relationship. He is 3 in 1. He is in community himself, and he made us for community. When Adam was placed in the garden, he had every need met. And the Lord said, it's not good for man to be alone. The Lord was there in relationship with him. And it wasn't enough that it was just Adam and God. Adam actually needed community. We need community. We were made for community. It's also important because Jesus says this, a new command I give you, love one another as I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. It's important for us as a church because this is how we're meant to be known, by the way that we do relationships with each other. One more verse. Matthew 5:43-48. You've heard that it was said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, that you may be children of your Father in heaven. He causes the sun to rise on the evil and the good and sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. If you love those who love you, what reward will you get? Are not even the tax collectors doing that? And if you greet only your own people, what are you doing more than these others? Do not even the pagans do that? Be perfect, therefore, as your heavenly Father is perfect. That's the invitation, perfection. And doing relationships well, doing relationships in a way that is so brilliant that people see the Father in the way that we do relationships. So that's why this matters. That's why we're doing this. I'm going to hand over to one of my favorite communicators in the world, certainly the most beautiful communicator in the world, my wife, Catherine.
Hi, everyone. It's been a long time since I've looked at you from up here. You're looking great, by the way. So we're not doing this because we're terrible communicators. We're doing this because we're actually really, really good communicators. Everyone right now is communicating to me. I can see all of you and I can see your faces. I can see your body language. And everyone else is pretty aware of it too. We're all communicating. I'm communicating, you're communicating. And we're all interpreting that communication and deciding how safe we are. And we were, as Jim was saying, we were created with connection and communication in mind. God loves connection. God loves communicating. And we were made for it. We've spent every second of our lives communicating. My newborn son, Leo, is an incredibly gifted communicator, particularly in the middle of the night. At the moment, he's communicating very strongly to me that he does not want to be in his room alone. So every time I put him down, he gets very cross at me and gives me feedback. He was born with a lot of communication skills and he's growing in them every day. As soon as we were born, we were communicating. And we're all operating on the software of communication we downloaded from our parents, our friends, and maybe even our spouses. So if I'm communicating all the time, I want to become more and more aware of how I'm communicating so I can create safety around me, so I can enable connection with me and other people, and so I can grow my ability to be respectful. And powerful communication is how we do that. Powerful communication isn't about being, you know, awkward and learning new skills. It's actually about being authentic, being who we really are in relationship, about being courageous and learning new skills, and about being present when people are communicating with us. And this is something that we will learn for the rest of our lives. We will grow in our ability again and again. Every day we'll grow in our ability to communicate. So this is my 12th year as a social worker, which I feel very old when I say that. And I've been taught by experts in communication and academia and in the church. When we were in BSSM, we learnt from Danny Silk, who wrote a bunch of the books that are on the book table, and a whole lot of other people. I've had all this teaching, and you know what? Secret, you may not have figured out, I'm not perfect. I know, it's hard to believe. I know. But I need to practice these every day, and it's my job to learn and to become aware of how I communicate so I can grow my ability to do it well. So what isn't powerful communication? Sometimes that's helpful to know. Powerful communication is acknowledging that people aren't mind readers. So this isn't a mind reading tool for all those who wanted to learn how to mind read. This isn't for you. I'm sorry. Mind reading is actually like we make a lot of assumptions in communication. We make a lot of assumptions, but these tools will create capacity for sharing truth and experience without assumptions. Powerful communication is also acknowledging that we don't have a remote control for other people. I know it's a bit of a bummer. I wish that I could just sleep, baby, sleep. Nope, doesn't work like that. I can't make someone do anything, feel anything, or respond in a way that I would like. Even God doesn't do this. I've come to understand that this type of power seeking is an out of bounds tool for us as God's children. When we try to make someone see, when we try to make someone understand, we unfortunately are sharing with them in a manipulative way to get a desired response. Jesus, for example, he died on a cross for us to clear obstacles that would have prevented a relationship with us. He didn't die on a cross to make us feel obligated to be saved or to make us feel sorry or to make us feel anything. He just did it to create an opportunity. So powerful communication isn't mind reading or controlling. These tools we're giving you are not for control. So there's no working to these tools. So these tools won't work or not work because they actually enable us to authentically communicate in a powerful way, not to make someone do something. Powerful communication also doesn't give you the tools to win fights, arguments, or force change. There are no trump cards in powerful communication. The goal is for an equality in the power balance, with one person representing themselves authentically and in that way inviting the others to do the same and then working on a win-win outcome. And lastly, powerful communication doesn't help you justify your behaviour. It doesn't support you to stay the same or to blame or to explain away mistakes that are incongruent with who you are. It bravely opens us up to growth and feedback. So what is powerful communication? Powerful communication authentically represents what's going on inside of us. So it's my job to tell you how I'm feeling. It's not your job to magically know how I'm feeling and do the things that I magically think you should do. Powerful communication helps me explain what's going on inside of me in a way that creates, protects, builds connection as we make space for the other person to meet us in communicating what's happening for them. Powerful communication is a communication style that requires courage, vulnerability, and commitment. A conscious decision is required to adopt and continually grow in this style. This isn't a, I did a course once and I shall be right, mate, kind of skill, and I don't really think anything is. This way of communicating doesn't minimize experiences or truth. It's really honest. There's no space for wishy-washy responses or brush-offs. Each person's truth or experience is validated and listened to, even if it's completely different from the other person's point of view. So minimization or brush-offs can happen. Sometimes if I share something emotional or big to me, a brush-off would be, "Ah, God works in mysterious ways." Or someone could say, "Oh, it could be worse." Or, "Ah, they've always been like that. That's just how it is." And sometimes we accidentally use those phrases to gloss over or brush off pain because it's really uncomfortable talking to someone who's in pain, isn't it? We get all on the inside. We like to shut it down or fix it or, you know, get rid of that awful feeling. Powerful communication creates capacity for us to hold space for connection by inviting the other person to enter in powerfully as an equal participant. It enables you to choose your own part, your assumptions and your mistakes, choosing connection and personal growth over being right. It helps you to represent yourself authentically in a bid for connection, empowers you to build connection in a clear and kind manner, and creates trust and lowers fear. So on a good day, we can control ourselves, right? And by that, I mean, as we grow in our self-awareness and our beliefs, behaviors, and actions become more aligned, we grow in our assertiveness. So I love this explanation from Carla Chud. When we're afraid of the truth, we either end up speaking truth without love, which is often aggression or passive aggression, aggressive communication, or we don't speak the truth in the name of love, which is passive communication. And both hurt our ability to form healthy heart connections. So I'm going to break down four communication styles. One, speaking the truth without love, aggressive communication. We've all probably experienced this in some way, shape, or form. Aggressive communication can take many forms. However, it usually results in a win-lose outcome. So someone wins and someone loses. It could sound like, "Well, if I'm helping, it needs to be this way." Or, "This is the way I've always done it." Or, "I fell asleep during your talk. It was boring." It can feel like an attack. And at least subconsciously, the person wants control over the outcome. And the person may be focused on their needs and maybe not thinking about the other person. And body language can look like eye rolling, crossed arms, making noises like, or things to insinuate other ways of doing it are stupid. I think we've all been there a little bit, come on. Number two, speaking truth without love, passive-aggressive communication, which sometimes can be pretty prolific in church communities, but I'm sure we don't have a problem here. So it could sound like, "Well, I guess we'll just eat it grilled again, like always." Love grilled. "Well, of course, we'll just do what you want to do." Or, "I'll wash the dishes, will I?" So this way of communicating is hiding in the assumption that you're not going to get your way even if you tried. Or you're trying to get your way without just saying, "Would you like to wash the dishes tonight because I don't want to?" Or avoiding disagreements or problems. And it can, everyone's a bit different, but it can look like sarcastic lack of eye contact, eye rolling or walking away. Okay, we're up to number three, guys. Not speaking the truth in love, passive communication. So it's a little bit different. This is when we think, we'll just do what everyone else says because I can't be bothered sharing what I think and I can't, you know, people probably won't listen to me anyway. So this can sound like, "I'm okay with whatever you want," or "I don't mind." Sometimes we do it when we're denying needs or wants and sometimes seemingly to protect connection, but really it's usually to avoid confrontation or responsibility. It's also when, you know, you don't want to really rock the boat, or when you don't believe that you have power in decision making. Okay, and we're up to number four. We did it, guys. Speaking the truth in love, assertive communication, or what we're calling powerful communication. I don't want to eat at that place, but I'd like to spend some time with you. What about this place instead? You don't have to guess what the other person's thinking. You don't have to get all stressed and, you know, worried that you have to make the right decision, because you know what's happening and you can make the decision together. So when we do it like that, we inform the other person of what's going on for us, that I don't really want to eat at that place, but really my priority is to spend time with you. I'm owning the control I have over myself. I'm owning what I believe and what I think. And I'm also respecting the other person, because I'm going, oh, you're a grown up. If I say I don't want to eat there, you're probably not going to throw a tantrum, hopefully. How can we know if our relationships are growing and growing in health? So I mentioned that we have the opportunity to always be learning and growing in our communication style. So what are some good signs that we're learning in a way that is leading to healthy relationships? So some green flags, I guess, instead of red flags. Assuming the best and asking for clarification. So if someone, you know, does something and you're like, whoa, attitude, hello. If we think instead, oh, maybe they're just having a bad day. Maybe it's not about me. We're assuming the best. So we're choosing to believe the best about the person and not make any judgments. Growing in courage for powerful communication. I know that that's something that I've grown in the last couple of years. I used to be a person that would run from any kind of conflict. Like, I'm not sporty, I don't run, but I would run from conflict. And I've grown in my ability to do that. Now I understand that it's worth the cost. It's worth it to enter into conflict, to hold connection with people. Also, when we're growing in our ability to share hoped for outcomes or negotiate with win-win outcomes, when we're representing thoughts and perspectives authentically while creating safety for others to think differently. So when I share what's going on in my heart, it's actually okay for the other person to disagree with me about things. Gasp. And growing in our ability to see from other people's perspectives while remaining aware of our own beliefs. So Jim is going to come and share our next communication essential, but as he prepares, I just want you to all take a moment and either share with someone next to you or reflect on what your normal or most frequently used communication style is. So is it win-lose or win-win?
Alrighty, I'm going to have you talking with that person again in just a moment, but if I could get your attention back just for 60 seconds before I send you back to talking to that person. We're going to do a bit of an exercise before I explain the next, before I explain what code books are. So we've got three statements here. You don't need to write it down. You can just think about it. But I've got three statements here. So first statement is a text message that says, I could do that, but I need to get a babysitter, ... Second statement is, I guess I'll do the dishes. Third statement is, sure. So I want you to think about those three statements. Think about what is being communicated and the emotions being communicated. You'll understand why we're doing this after we do it. But have a think about what you think is the message and what you think is the feelings. We're just going to take 30 seconds. Then I'm going to get you into groups, but I'll give you instructions on what that's going to look like, because I've got a certain way we're doing it. I see that you're all already discussing it, which you're jumping in. But I need you to do this in a certain way, and there's a reason for it. All right, I'm going to invite you to break up into groups of three or four. You can move around the room to do this, but I want you to have at least one person, either of a different gender or preferably a different generation, in the group if possible. And you're going to share your answers. All righty, if you want to wrap your conversations and come back to me. Whose group had like entirely the same answers? Just give me a wave of your hand. Okay, I saw like two hands there. Whose group had like dramatically different answers on at least one question? Yeah, a couple groups. Anyone have just like marginally different answers? Yeah, I'm getting more nods, more waves. All right, I'm going to explain why that is in a moment. But this communication essential is a principle to keep in mind. And I'm going to share with you something that you are already doing. So congratulations, you're already doing it. But I'm also going to share with you a belief that you probably have about this thing that you're already doing that is unhelpful. This principle is what we call code books. I was recently watching this show on Apple TV about NASA, and there was this scene where there was an error. Something went wrong with the rocket. And these two people pulled out these big binders and they were frantically searching through these binders to find what the error code meant. Like what had gone wrong. And this is essentially what we're talking about with code books. What is being communicated by the code. So that binder is what we're talking about. It's the nuance of how we communicate with others. Imagine it as an internal book that both communicates and translates what different types, parts, styles, and phrases of verbal and nonverbal communication mean. As we did that activity, you guys had some different answers. And individuals will have interpreted all those statements based on their code book. What those different things meant to you will likely differ depending on your code book. How you interpret it will differ depending on your code book. So that's what you're already doing. You already have a code book that you are operating from. You have an internal code book that you communicate based on and that you interpret the communications of others through. It's the lens that you see every verbal and nonverbal communication through. And as Catherine mentioned previously, we are all communicating all the time. Whether it is verbal or nonverbal, we are constantly communicating. We are expert communicators. But the way that you are doing that constant communication is straight out of your code book. And the way that you're interpreting those constant communications of the people around you is based on your code book. When we lived in America, Catherine was running a small group with five other women, and four of those women in this group were Americans. They were doing like Bible studies together, etc. And so she was running this group, and she would very affectionately refer to this group as her chickens, which to her was this like maternal, affectionate term that would convey that she has chosen these people and that she loves these people. So she'd say something like, "We're meeting today at 1, my chickens." And she was communicating her investment and her protectiveness of them. So to her, she was saying, "People who I've chosen and love, we are meeting at 1. But because she was communicating to people with a different code book, the American women were hearing, "We meet at 1, you cowards." Which you can see why that might not be a helpful thing for them to be hearing. So your code book has been formed in two primary ways. We kind of mentioned this already, but your two primary ways that your code book is formed is from your parents and from the playground. How your parents communicated verbally and non-verbally and your experiences and relationships as a child. Your code book also tends to differ depending on religion, culture, nation, like all these kind of factors, socioeconomic status, these all influence your code book. Your code book is robust, it is lengthy, and it is also individualized. No single other person has the same code book as you. Not even your siblings or family will have exactly the same code book, because even though they may have experienced a lot of the same things, their perceptions, their thoughts around those will differ. So the way that their code book has developed will be different. We all have our own individualized code book, and the belief that we operate out of is that we all have the same code book. We tend to think that our code book is standard issue, that everyone's communications is coming from the same code book. So we judge the communication of others based on our own code book. That first example that we used in that exercise before, "I could do that, but I'd need to get a babysitter, dot, dot, dot." That was communication that actually happened in the preparation for this group. The preparation for this course, sorry. It was us organizing a meeting to do this course. Tash said that I can say that it was her. So Tash communicated this to the group. And I heard it in a very particular way. Because the three little dots at the bottom, which are called ellipses, to me, an ellipses communicates something vastly different than how the communicator meant to communicate it. And I suspect this is a generational thing. And I would be curious to find if those people with different generations in your group and maybe with younger generations in your group interpreted this one differently. Yeah, I'm getting nods. Okay. See, to me, an ellipsis denotes a trailing off. The way I interpret this is a trailing off, like not finishing your sentence. To me, it's passive aggressive. I got that text and I read, "I could do that, but it would be inconvenient for me and I don't wish to communicate that to you. So I want you to either change the plan or simply know how difficult this is for me." That's how I read that. And so I read that message and I had this flash of emotion, this flash of annoyance of like, what? We're organizing a communication course and this is the communication we're getting? thankfully, I know Tash. Like, I know Tash, I know her heart, and I know that that's not her. She's a really forthright person. That's not how she communicates. She's not passive aggressive. So I had that flash and I was like, what's going on? I'm wondering if that isn't what the person meant to communicate. I'm wondering if this means something different to them. And it totally does. That's not how she meant to communicate that. She was just communicating that she was totally happy to do that. She just was going to have to organize a babysitter. So nobody else has your code book. And here's the fun thing. It's not actually anyone's responsibility to know your code book. Not even your partner. It's not their responsibility to just internally be aware of your code book. Healthy relationships look like sharing your code book with others, not expecting that others would understand it. We've been talking about powerful communication, and we'll talk about powerful relationships, which means doing relationships from a place of authenticity, intentionality, and a posture of seeking connection. When we did a trial run of this course, I was asked, when it comes to code books, whose responsibility is it if there is a miscommunication regarding a code book? Like, that moment that Tash and I had, I could have got really annoyed at her and like harbored annoyance or something. So like, whose responsibility is it when that kind of thing occurs? Here's the thing about powerful relationships. It's always your responsibility, no matter what side you're on, because powerful relationships means you are moving towards people powerfully. You are powerfully choosing connection. So it means it's always your responsibility, which is great because you can only control you. You can't make the other person come to the table. We're going to share with you a tool next week for communicating in those moments. But I'm wondering if is a powerful question. Rather than assuming something, I'm wondering if what you meant to communicate was this. Or I'm wondering if you were actually communicating this because I experienced it in this way. The principle of code books is understanding that you have your own unique way of communicating. And often when we try and judge the communications of others via our own code book, we're going to misunderstand what is being communicated. We're going to think a sigh is them implying that we're lazy and not doing enough, when really they're just tired. We'll be talking about how to communicate in those kind of moments. I am going to hand over to Zach, but as he comes up, just take a moment and why don't you share with someone next to you if there's a thing that occurs to you that might be a code book for your family or was in your family growing up. Was there a certain nose noise that indicated your father's displeasure? Have a chat.
All right. What we're going to talk about now as we kind of come to the end is we're going to talk about feedback. And so feedback, maybe this is a weird word for some people, maybe not. So feedback really just refers to how other people are experiencing you. So this is really important when it comes to relationships, especially the way that we're wanting to do relationships, where the goal is connection. If the goal is connection, then feedback really matters because it's going to enhance our connection with others. Feedback, it tells us information about how other people are experiencing you that you may not know, you may not be aware of. We all have blind spots, right? We all have things that we do that we're unaware of and might come from those code books. And so feedback is an opportunity for us to become aware of how other people experience us and to be able to adjust and change if that's necessary. I think another thing that people might assume about feedback is that it's always negative, but that's not true. Feedback can be positive. People can say, you're always so calm when something goes wrong, or your presentation is really professional. So feedback can be things that are positive. It can be things that are good. It's not always saying negative things. However, we're going to spend some time thinking about feedback, and there's a couple of questions which we'll chat about in just a moment. And we're going to think about how we receive feedback, because it is an opportunity for us to change. It's an opportunity for us to adjust if necessary, or to continue doing something positive that we're already doing. Feedback might be, when something goes wrong, I notice that you often get angry and look for someone to blame. That's an opportunity for us to adjust. Or your presentation would have been more engaging if you asked more questions. That's an opportunity to adjust. Let's talk about some questions so that feedback doesn't happen. We're going to turn to the people around you and talk about, think of a time when your connection to another person actually benefited from an exchange in feedback. And this can be simple things like, oh, thanks for washing up the dishes or something like that. It doesn't need to be this formal meeting where you get pulled in and da-da-da-da-da. It can be just passed by comments like that. And what do you find the most challenging about receiving feedback? So those questions are up there, so chat about that. I want to talk about now a few responses that we might experience to maybe when we give feedback, we might experience these kinds of responses, or maybe we might notice ourselves when we receive feedback, we might see ourselves responding in this way. For me, I find that when I'm in control, when I go to someone and ask them to give me feedback, I find that I can receive it quite well. However, if someone's giving me feedback out of the blue and I'm not ready for it, this first one, being defensive, is something that I find myself doing really, really easily. I think this is a really common response to feedback, is being defensive. So this happens when a person might get angry and they might punish you for raising your concerns with them. They might not realize that they're punishing you, so maybe that book, Unpunishable, would be good to look at. That might be a response. They might return feedback. They might come back to you with something that you're not doing well. So well, it might be leaving the dishes on the sink, but you leave all the clothes all over the floor. And it's like, okay, but that's not actually receiving the feedback. That's just kind of shifting the blame or almost like a distraction, I guess. So they might start explaining or justifying. This is something I do so often when I receive feedback, is explaining away or justifying. Well, I don't mean to interrupt you and talk over the top of you. I just get so excited and I don't want to lose the thought from my head when it comes. And so you're kind of justifying away. And they might be legitimate explanations, but as soon as when you're receiving that feedback, might not be the best time to say that. And so it's good to think about and pay attention to what you're doing. Another one, being defensive, might look like discounting what the person's saying. Well, you shouldn't feel like that. I don't get upset when this happens to me, so you shouldn't get upset when that happens to you. And so you kind of discount their feelings, discount their experience. Because again, feedback is how other people are experiencing you. And so they're not going to experience things the same way that you do because they're not you. However, when we receive feedback, we might find ourselves being defensive, trying to avoid the situation, just reinforcing the status quo, thinking, well, no one else thinks that I have this issue, therefore it's not an issue, rather than taking on. So an opportunity is that we can embrace this feedback as an opportunity to adjust, an opportunity to grow, to adjust our behavior or our attitude towards connection, because connection is costly, it's unselfish, and sometimes it feels unreasonable. It's good when we're receiving feedback to ask the question, how have I received this feedback to strengthen our connection? Actually asking ourselves honest questions, because again, we can't control other people, we can only control ourselves. So when we're receiving feedback, there are a few people that we might find it difficult to receive feedback from. So sometimes this might be people in authority figures, especially if you think that they're not very good at being in authority, that they shouldn't be in authority. Maybe you'll find it difficult to receive feedback from them. Maybe they're a person that you've discounted. Maybe, oh, they're too young, or they're too old, or they're a woman, or they're a man, or, you know, they're a hypocrite. Like, they haven't shown consistency in their life in this area. Therefore, I'm not going to receive feedback from them. It's a missed opportunity, because people, whether even if they are a hypocrite, even if they are not living well in that area of life, that doesn't mean that they don't have good feedback to receive from you. Or maybe someone isn't giving feedback well. And so that could be a really easy excuse to not receive feedback from them, because they're not doing it well. But again, you cannot control them. You can only control yourself. Therefore, it's your responsibility to receive good feedback out of their bad communication. You're able to, as Jim and Catherine often say, chew the meat and spit out the bones. You are actually able to find the good feedback in the midst of bad communication. It's possible. And so dealing with feedback, being able to receive feedback, means dealing with shame, dealing with these feelings of failure. Sometimes we can believe, when we're receiving feedback, we can believe, oh, well, I'm such a failure. I always do this wrong. And that can cause us to not actually be able to adjust and change because we think that we're incapable of change. That's not true. You are capable of change. Dealing with receiving feedback might look like dealing with this sense of injustice or feeling misunderstood. It may be that someone is misunderstanding you and you can help clarify when necessary, but again, try to dig down into what they're actually saying and what they're actually communicating and asking you the question of, is there truth in this? I think that receiving feedback, a great attitude to have is curiosity. Because curiosity does not mean that you agree with what they're saying, but it also does not mean you're going to shut down what they're saying. When you're curious, you'll ask questions more than you'll make statements. You'll listen and try to get at the heart of what they're trying to say. Again, even you may end up disagreeing. They may be giving you wrong feedback. It may not be the case, but if you're not curious, you'll never know what they're trying to actually say. And so we need to have humility in listening over this need to be right. And so it is a growth opportunity. And like I said towards the start, I find it easiest to receive feedback when I've kind of gone to the person and asked for feedback. And so that's a great thing to do. That's a great attitude to have, is actually going to the person and inviting feedback. Some helpful language to use when you're receiving feedback. A great place to start is just saying thank you. Thank you for sharing. It takes courage, because that's true. Even if the feedback's bad, even if that they're not necessarily correct, it takes courage to give that feedback. It also, starting with this statement, allows you to slow down and stop that kind of defensive response you might find yourself having. If you start by saying thank you, it gives you a chance to respond rather than react to what is being said. Saying thank you, asking questions like, help me understand. This is the curiosity thing again. Help me understand. When you say this, what do you mean? Help me understand. When I did this, how did that make you feel? Asking, can you give me an example of when I did that? Is a great question to ask. And how could I check if I'm still doing it? What can I do? What can I check to see if I'm still doing this unhelpful behavior? Next week, we're going to talk a bit more about giving feedback. We're going to talk about these I statements of, you might have heard it before, that like, when this happens, I feel, and I would like to feel. That'll be, if you haven't heard that before, that'll be unpacked next week. It's also good to have appreciation sandwich when you're giving feedback to someone else, or a encouragement sandwich. There's a few different statements. This is kind of where you say, hey, I love it when you do this. I think you're really great at this, but when you do this, it's not super helpful. However, you're awesome at doing it. If I was more prepared, I'd have a real example, but all it says here is appreciation sandwich. But hopefully you're picking up what I'm putting down. It's important to check your own motive when you're giving feedback as well. Maybe when you're giving feedback, you're not trying to enhance connection. Maybe you're trying to prove someone wrong or to control someone's behavior. Maybe they're not behaving the way you want them to behave, so you think giving feedback will be a great way of manipulating them. It's important, just because something is true doesn't mean it's helpful. Just because you could give feedback in some area doesn't mean you need to give feedback in that area. So it's good to check your own motive, because the goal of relationships is connection, deeper connection. And so that should be our filter. Well, that's me. I'm going to hand over to Jim. He's going to do a rap for us.
If you could drop a beat.
Just on that appreciation sandwich, one of my favorite stories about feedback being given, there's someone I'm in relationship with who shared this story with me of getting feedback from Brad, and it was this feedback that they still talk about today, and it was years ago, but it dramatically changed their life, and it was given with a bottle of wine. So like, that's a great appreciation sandwich. If you want to give me feedback, that's my preferred way to receive feedback, accompanied with wine. The thing is, like, we're going to be talking a lot about a lot of skills, a lot of tools over these 3 weeks. And these tools might feel a little bit awkward at first. You might notice someone else doing it. You might notice someone else asking you, I'm wondering if that's what you meant to communicate. And you'll kind of share a winky moment of like, oh, you're doing that thing. But that's okay, like, we learn by practicing. And you'll also have moments where emotional flash and you'll forget to use the skill. I've been teaching this stuff for quite a few years, but I had a moment a couple years back where I was in a team meeting and I was presenting an idea. I'm sure it was a brilliant idea. And I had someone interrupt me and talk over me. And I flashed with emotion because I was like, disrespect. And so I flashed with emotion and was like, waited for the person to finish speaking. And I was like, well, as I had been in the middle of saying, which for me was so passive aggressive. Like, that's not how I normally communicate. But I just had flashed with emotion and I like dropped my tools and I went straight for passive aggressive communication. And I got to pull that person aside at the end of the meeting and be like, hey, I communicated really passive aggressively in that moment and I'm really sorry that I did that. That wasn't okay. Can I just talk to you about what happened? Like, I felt disrespected when you interrupted me. And we got to have this beautiful moment of connection. The person didn't even know that, didn't notice my passive aggressive communication in that moment, but I still got to own that and I got to powerfully communicate. And from that, we developed more health in our connection. We developed a more robust relationship. And so I'm excited for you guys to have the opportunity, for all of us to have the opportunity to learn about relationships, to grow in our ability to have robust, healthy relationships, because this is what we're meant to be known for. We are meant to be known for the way that we love people. That's the opportunity that we have as a church, as Christians, as followers of Jesus, is to be known for the way that we do relationships. So I'm going to pray, because that loving like Jesus loves requires Jesus. It requires empowering by Jesus. So I'm going to pray for us and then we're going to wrap. But I am excited to see you guys again next week and the week after. We also, just a reminder, we have a 3 p.m. version of this that is a bit less churchy. We won't be using Bible verses and stuff. And the reason that we want to do that is we actually, like, this is important for us as a church, but this is also important for people, because people were made for connection. So we're doing a slightly less churchy version of this in case you have neighbors or friends who might not be comfortable learning about Jesus's view of connection, but would still benefit from learning how to have healthy connection. So that's 3 p.m. this afternoon. And is every afternoon after the morning of this course. All right, I'm going to pray for us. Father, I just thank you that you are really good at relationships. Thank you that you are a really powerful communicator. We just ask that you empower us to see people how you see them, to move towards them in love. We just invite you to reveal to us anything that might be blocking us from healthy relationships, anything that might be generating dysfunction in our relationships, that you would just highlight that and help us get healing in those areas so that we can be known for the way that we love people. Thank you, Father. Amen.